Hi, welcome to J the Blue Blue. Let me start that again. Hello, I am Jen Wilson, and welcome to at the I'm Jen Wilson, the Healing Rebel podcast. Oh my goodness, this could be an interesting episode today if I'm tripping over my words like that at the very beginning. Today, I want to talk about. I'm going to talk about breast health, but also how that ties into overall health. I was listening to a doctor on another podcast who was talking about prevention being better than the cure, obviously, when it comes to any health problem. But so many of us wait until we get the diagnosis before we do anything about it. And if you have been listening to my podcast or you have been following me for any length of time, you will know that I am always banging on about what can we do to look after our health, what can the basic things that we do to support our immune systems, to support our health function, to be as well as we can be, even if you've already been given a diagnosis. Now, if you haven't, if you're not already living with a diagnosis of something, please, I beg you, don't take that for granted. Do everything in your power to keep you as healthy as possible. Because when you've got a diagnosis for many things, you're kind of snookered. You are then living on the edge of how do I feel today? Oh, is today going to be a good day? Is today not going to be a good day? What's happening? What's happening? And that in itself is a lot of energy and a lot of effort. When And I speak for myself here. When I am well, I do sometimes slip into taking that for granted. Oh, things are good now. I can be a bit more relaxed with my eating habits, or I can be a wee bit more careless with my sleeping routines and sleeping habits. I haven't been this time, so I've definitely been more. Less invested in my health previously this time round, and I think because the flare was so bad last year in 2022 that I'm like, no, I just can't. I cannot roll the dice on this anymore. I have to take this really seriously. I've been given this health, these health conditions, multiple. They are all underlying with inflammation. If you listen to me, you'll know that I'm always telling you that inflammation is the root cause of all chronic health, is the root problem at all health conditions. What is the cause of that inflammation? That's where we need to be exploring so that we can reduce the inflammation and we can be healthier and happier, even if you've already been given a diagnosis. But prevention is better than the cure. So when it comes to breast health, what this doctor was talking about was for women in the UK over 50 or 55. They are invited along to a regular mammogram. So that's where they clamp your boob into a machine that then takes an X-ray type imagery of the breast tissue or the part of it that it can see. So it's not, it's what's used. Is it the gold standard? I don't think so. He uses a heat sensor, and in what he's discovered is women who hold more heat, so that would indicate there's inflammation in the breast tissue, is an indication that they're at higher risk. If you've listened to previous podcasts, you will know that I talk a lot about flushing out your lymphatic system, getting a daily lymphatic routine into your life. My 3-5 day body and mind reset takes you through the initial assessment process, and the assessment is a treatment. So if Oh, the only thing you ever do is that assessment on a daily basis, then you're already doing something to help minimize your risk and to help your body naturally heal. In our breast tissue, we have got loads of lymph nodes. If you get tender breasts around certain times of the month, then that's your lymph nodes getting inflamed and getting sticky and congested, and because there's more hormone that needs to be released. So by doing the daily lymphatic work, what I have discovered is that my boobs don't get sore at certain times of the month. They do still change throughout the month, but they don't get that really tender sore. You can't hug me, it's too painful kind of experience. And that has been a game changer. Women's bodies change throughout our lifespan. The average age of menopause is 51. We go into perimenopause 10 to 15 years before that, which means that you can be entering into perimenopause around your mid to late 30s. When I was around 35, I started getting really tender breasts. Tender breasts often is excess estrogen, and your body needs to flush that out. The two sex hormones that are predominant in women are estrogen and progesterone. They kind of work in synergy with each other. One of them creates inflammation, the other one helps calm that inflammation down. Progesterone starts to decrease quite significantly at around 35, maybe even younger than that, because everybody's hormones are going to be slightly different. So if you start to notice that you're getting tender breasts, that those levels of estrogen to progesterone are already starting to shift. So we need to do what we can to support our body to help eliminate as much of that excess estrogen as possible. That's where your lymphatic work is going to come in. Super important. There are other things that we can do to support our general health, in particular breast health and female hormone health. When you start to move, if you're not already in perimenopause, towards menopause, then postmenopausal, there are some really, really specific things that we can do to support that. Now, these things also, when this doctor was talking about them for benefit for, and he was talking about breast care, these are the exact same things that we need for those of us that live with autoimmune conditions, those of us that have impaired immune systems, any health condition, and even over the couple of years with COVID, the Rona, people who were really sick were people who were low in these same things. So this information, although I'm talking about it as care for your breast health, it's care for female health, it's care for your overall health. Now, the first one that I'm going to talk about is vitamin D. If you were tuned into any independent media that was able to talk about COVID and what was going on there, people with low vitamin D were the ones that were having really difficult times with COVID. People who died had really low levels of vitamin D. Now, in Scotland, under the NHS, we can get a one vitamin D test run per year through the NHS. You can also get vitamin D tests done fairly inexpensively privately. I think Holland and Barrett have a vitamin D test, and you can do it's just like a finger prick test to get the blood, and they can measure how many, I don't know the, I can't remember the word, nanomoles or something like that, that is per liter or milliliter in your blood. Now, what every doctor that I've heard talk about optimal health will tell you, for immune function, for hormone health care, for the breast care, you want that number to be over 100, whatever the unit is, per however many units of blood. The normal ranges are lower than that. So if you could be sitting with 70 and the NHS will come back and say you're within a normal range, you could be sitting at 50 and they'll come back and tell you you're within a normal range. Normal under these parameters just means that no disease is prevalent no problem is prevalent at this time, it doesn't mean that you're in optimal health. So we want to get those numbers into the optimal range, optimal health. So we want that number to be over 100. I've even heard one doctor say, talking about autoimmunity, that he would want his patients to be up near the 150 mark. So high levels of vitamin D. The other problem that I've heard with the NHS is when they were recommending vitamin D for people, they were way under the daily recommended, like their daily recommended number was way under what is going to be of any beneficial help. I believe that number was 400 IUD. Now, if you go out in the sun and you're okay having your skin exposed to the sun without sunscreen on, your body can make up to 25,000 IUD per day. So 400 isn't even going to scratch the surface. It's not even a fleck of dust. If your vitamin D levels are low, it's not 400 is not, it's laughable how low that is. What this particular doctor I was listening to recommended was about 4,000 IUD and sun exposure. If you live in Scotland, like I do, the sun exposure is only strong enough between the beginning of April and the end of September. So we've got quite a short window of time, and on a cloudy day, that's reduced even further. Like if you, a lot of the weather apps will give you a UV level, and if it's medium to low, you're not gonna, you have to be outside all day with as much of your naked body exposed to the sun as possible without sunscreen on to be able to get your body working to create enough vitamin D, which is actually a hormone, it's not a vitamin, but anyway. And if you're wearing sunscreen, the UVA, UVB rays are blocked, then your body's not going to be able to get the information it needs from the rays of the sun to be able to produce the vitamin D. So taking a high dose. Now there was some concern when people during COVID, when people were being advised on alternative mediums of information about taking vitamin D, that if you are taking just vitamin D by itself, there can be problems with calcification in the body. And calcification is not something that you want. That's like lumps of calcium that can block veins and can block joints and can block all sorts of problems. The solution to minimizing that risk is to make sure that your vitamin D has a K2 supplement in with it. And it's very common to get vitamin D3 with K2 already added to it. So if you're taking a vitamin D supplement, that is where the recommendation would be. To work out how much you want to be taking every day, you really need to know what your baseline is. So getting a test and finding out what that number is so that you know where to start. So if you're already quite high in your vitamin D levels, then you're not going to need to take as much in the supplement. If you're really low, then you're going to need to take much more to get those levels pushed up. But do find out if you can get, I think NHS England is different. I don't know what their rules are, but I do know that under NHS Scotland, you can get one vitamin D test done per year. And as I said, you can get it done privately. I'm pretty sure that Holland & Barrett sells a vitamin D test. How reliable that is, I'm not 100% sure. And if anybody knows of a reliable company that does an inexpensive vitamin D test, please do let us know so that we can share that out. But vitamin D is essential for your immune function health. So if you have an overregulated immune system, it will help downregulate it. If you've got an underregulated, it will help bring it up. The next thing is iodine, particularly for female health. Now, iodine is really important for thyroid function. In my research around perimenopause and menopause, a lot of the symptoms that come under the perimenopause, menopause umbrella are also symptoms of thyroid dysfunction. And that can often get missed for women who are of that perimenopause, menopausal age, of, oh, it's just perimenopause, and their thyroid function isn't checked. Iodine is excellent for helping your thyroid. To saturate your thyroid, you need 3 micrograms or milligrams. I'm never 100% sure when they say these things. So 3 milligrams of iodine to be able to saturate the thyroid. Thyroid is really important for energy, for function of your body, for your nervous system. Oh, like there's nothing in your body that doesn't have a purpose. Everything has a purpose. So 3 micrograms or milligrams is not a huge lot, a huge amount to be able to keep your thyroid functioning well. Symptoms of thyroid dysfunction, fatigue, or hyperactivity. Not being able to gain weight, not being able to lose weight. Sudden weight gain or sudden weight loss can be thyroid function, so it's important to be interested in one of those. Always the professional here. Thyroid function is really important. Now, in Japan, where they have really, really low levels of breast cancer, because they consume so many seaweed-based foods, they consume about 12 micrograms or milligrams of iodine every single day. And we only need 3. So if you are supplementing with it, somewhere between 3 and 12 is a safe range for you to be able to take. There's a you can do an iodine test, actually, where you get iodine and paint it on your skin and it goes like a dark colour. And then depending on how quickly the iodine absorbs into your body will determine whether or not your iodine is low. So if it absorbs it really quickly, under, I think it's 3 hours, 3 or 5 hours, if it absorbs it really quickly, then your body is low in iodine. And if after that 3 to 5 hours, your skin still looks stained, then you've got sufficient iodine. So that's a really, really simple, really, really safe test to do. So you just get a bottle of iodine solution, paint it on, see what happens. The sea air is excellent for you being able to absorb iodine. You breathe it in, being near the sea. So for those of us that live in the city, we need to get to the beach more often, and then you're getting iodine from the sea air. And if you live by the sea, then you already have that benefit. So get outside and deeply inhale. If you already eat a diet high in seaweed-based foods, then you should have sufficient iodine in your body. But that wee patch test is a really simple and effective way to be able to test whether or not you have sufficient iodine. The next thing is your omega-3s. Now, we have omega-3, omega-6, and omega-9s. We want to have all of them within ratio to each other. Now, in most Western diet people, because seed oils are added to all processed foods, like if you look at the ingredients list of your crisps, your biscuits, your pasta sauces, your stir-fry sauces, pretty much anything that comes in a jar, there will be seed oils added to that. So seed oils or sunflower oil, vegetable oil, canola oil / rapeseed oil. These are your omega-6s. The ratio for most Western diet people is 12 to 1 omega-6s to omega-3s. We want that to be 2 to 1 omega-3s to omega-6s. So we want to have double the amount of omega-3s in our diet than we have omega-6s. Really simple way to do that is to minimize your processed foods. Check the labels and see what's got these seed oils in it. And anything's got seed oil in it, avoid it. You can increase your omega-3s by things like oily fish, but there's a question mark over how available that omega-3 is, because so many of the oily fish, your salmon, your mackerel, sardines. So many of them are factory sourced, they're not wild sourced. And wild sourced, like if you ever looked at the price of a wild sourced Atlantic salmon, it's extortionate. So that's quite an expensive way to get omega-3s in. And if the salmon is being farmed, it's not going to have sufficient omega-3s in it because it's not been able to swim out in the wild waters that build the muscle, that build the strength, that then give it those essential oils. Flaxseed and chia seed are really good. Now, if you're using flaxseed, you want to buy whole flaxseed and then mill it as you use it. So grind it up, break it up as you use it. If you use the whole flaxseed and you haven't ground it down, when you consume it, it puts this like jelly type coating around the seed, which can be good for helping clear out your pipes if you're constipated. But you're not then getting the oils from the seeds because it's put this gel coating around it, and that doesn't get broken down in the digestive tract. So if you're looking to get your omega-3s out of your flaxseeds, buy them whole, and then as you use them, about a tablespoon, put it into like a coffee grinder or a mortar and pestle, smash them up so that it breaks down the seed that then releases the oils. Now, if you buy the flaxseed already milled, they're going to have lost a lot of their potency. As soon as those seeds get milled, they start to degrade because the enzymes get released, the oils get released, and they start to break down. So buying the bags of flaxseed that are already ground down are super convenient for sure, but you're not going to get the same benefit from them. So milling down the flaxseeds as you use them. Chia seeds, you want to, with the chia seeds, most people want to not have them completely raw because they can irritate, particularly if you've got inflammatory bowel disease, diverticulitis. You shouldn't be having those seeds at all. If you've got an irritated bowel, the eating the seed whole without letting it get that jelly so substance around it could be problematic in your digestive tract. So tablespoon of the chia seeds, mix in some water, leave it to sit for 10 minutes, let it go gloopy, and then consume it so that you're getting the benefit from those chia seeds. So different to the flax seed, how you want to consume them, so that you can get your omega-3 seed, your omega-3 oils. Then what foods do you eat? Fermented foods. Fermented foods are a great way to improve your gut microbiome, and I'm sure I've talked about this on previous podcasts. The fermented foods, the process of fermenting starts to break down the food, so they're pre-digested. Then they enhance the different microbes that you're consuming, so that you're fermented foods are a million times better than taking a probiotic. These are natural probiotics. You're getting multiple strains, huge diversity in them, and an abundance of them. And then when you've fermented the veggies, you're then getting the fiber from the veg to, when that goes into your body, to then feed, to continue feeding the microbes so that they set up home in your colon. If you have ever been on antibiotics, if you're not consuming fermented foods, you're going to have dysbiosis, you're going to have an imbalance, because antibiotics are not, let's go in and get this one strain of bacteria. They just wipe the whole lot out and they cause dysbiosis. So that's an imbalance in microbes. And very often what happens is when most of the microbes get wiped out, the bad guys come in and go, whoa, party time, and have a party in your gut, and then can cause a problem called C. diff, which is really difficult to diagnose and really difficult to heal. So getting fermented foods into your diet is really important to rebalance what's going on there. Now, when you're starting out, and definitely spoken about this before, Janice Klein has been on my podcast at least twice talking about this. So go back and listen to those podcasts But when you're starting out with fermented foods, you always start small, about a tablespoon to start with. See how your body responds and gradually build that up. I definitely talked about this on a previous podcast about the research that came out in the journal called Cell, Cell, and it was comparing fermented foods to fibre only, and fermented foods made so much more difference to the diversity of the gut microbiome. Really, really important to get them in. They also produce this K2 that I spoke about with the vitamin D. So if you've got a really highly fermented foods diet, you might not need so much. It might not be necessary for you to have that K2, but if you're not sure, vitamin D with K2. But fermented foods do help create that. The other thing that fermented foods do is they help build a really strong gut wall. So for those of us that have inflammatory bowel disease, for those of you that have IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome, which is very different from inflammatory bowel disease, you've still got an irritated gut, you've still got a weak gut lining. These fermented foods are going to help create the butyrate that is needed to create these really tight junctions in your gut. So fermented foods are essential. And if you go and learn from Janice, you will learn so many ways to make amazing tasting fermented foods. Whole lot of different tastes in there, diversity, amazing abundance of deliciousness. Eating your green leafy veggies. These help get your magnesium, potassium, sodium, all those good things increased. They are good for your gut, they feed your gut microbes. They are generally green, leafy green vegetables are more bitter, which are excellent to get your liver stimulated to produce bile so that you can properly digest. Most of us, particularly those of us in following Western diets that are not following a whole food plant-based diet, don't produce enough bile. If you eat a lot of fatty foods, deep fried foods, crisps, biscuits, cakes, these kind of things, they don't stimulate your digestion. They don't stimulate the stomach acids to be produced so that they can break these things down. And that makes the digestion really sluggish. So having the leafy greens that brings in bitters. I'm sure I've spoken about digestive bitters on here before, but if not, digestive bitters are excellent to take about 30 minutes before you eat to stimulate that. The liver to stimulate the bile production to get that stomach acid going so that when you eat, you can kill off all the bad bacteria, you can start to really break down and digest that food so that as it goes through, the nutrients can be taken in, the nutrients can be absorbed. Everything works so much better. The other thing is your cruciferous, I don't think I say that word right, veggies, so your broccolis, your cauliflowers, your cabbages. If you're eating fermented foods, you're going to be using cabbage as your base for most of them anyway. Excellent for your health. They're so good for clearing out all the bad stuff. They are dense in nutrients that we need, or magnesiums, or I said this already, the magnesiums, the sodiums, potassiums, all that really essential stuff to get your immune system functioning at optimal levels. To get your digestion system working at optimal levels. Now, if your system is really sensitive, particularly to those cruciferous veggies, fermenting them is a good way to help start to break them down to make them easier on the digestion. Also, making sure that they're cooked really well. That makes them softer for the digestive system to break them down. So, avoiding eating them raw. If you can eat them raw, awesome. But if you can't, then making sure that they're well cooked or fermented will really help. Because cruciferous veggies can cause a lot of gas and bloating for people, but that's to do with your gut microbiome imbalance. And that's because they are coming in trying to get the good guys fed, kill off the bad guys, and the bad guys are releasing gases and making you all bloated and uncomfortable. But all of these things are going to help with your breast care. But they're going to help with your overall general health. And you know that's what I'm all about. You know that's what I love. And I want you to be healthy and happy and work on this prevention And if you have already got a diagnosis, it's going to support you through your healing journey. It's going to support your health to give you the best chance of the best outcome. Now, we are all going to die at some point. That is not up for discussion. That is not anything that we can avoid. And if we look after our health the best way that we possibly can, it's going to make that journey a whole lot easier. It's going to make going into old age less painful, less of a struggle, less of a challenge. And let's face it, we're here to live the healthiest, happiest life that we can and be able to give something to the world. And we can't do that if we're in bed not well. We can't do that if we're always struggling and fatigued and lacking. I'm just going to drop in one extra wee supplement. Well, not, it's not a supplement, it's a extra wee thing that's really beneficial for your health that I've started adding in recently that I've noticed just energetically I feel better, mentally I feel better, like less brain fog, although don't count the start of today's podcast, brain fog's a bit less, has been selenium. Now you can go and buy a selenium supplement or you can take Brazil nuts. I have heard 3 Brazil nuts are enough to give you enough selenium for the day. I also heard somebody else say 5. I opted for 5 because what's the difference? 5 Brazil nuts giving you enough selenium for female hormone health is essential, especially if you're in that perimenopause, menopause stage. My mind has gone blank on other sources of selenium, but I do know that Brazil nuts, 5 of them, and if you go, but Brazil nuts, I chop them up, put them through my, add them to my yogurt in the morning. You can dip them in dark chocolate and eat them with dark chocolate. Just make sure that the dark chocolate's really low sugar. You can blitz them up into the powder and mix them through your smoothie. There are lots of ways that you can take Brazil nuts if you find that they're a bit, because they are a bit thick, I think. If that's even a way to describe them. But yeah, adding that in for my female hormone health has been really beneficial. I feel like my moods are a bit more even. Energy's been a bit more even. Things have been, yeah, good. 5 Brazil nuts. You can do that. That is easy. So I'm going to start, like, those vitamins, minerals, food sources, really, really important. The other thing that is important for your breast health, your lymphatic flush, but also getting to know your boobs. The recommendation is to check your boobs once a month. Check them every day while you're in the shower, while you're washing yourself. Like, it's not difficult to rub round, to rub through, to have a feel as you go through your shower routine. Is you have to get dressed every day. Can you look in a mirror and just have a look? How do your boobs naturally sit? Most of us have one boob that sits slightly lower than the other, one slightly bigger than the other. Get to know which one is which. When you raise your arms, when you bring your arms down, how do they look? How do your nipples look? Are there dents? Are there dimples? Is there shading in the skin? What is going on? So that when and if change happens, you know that this change is not normal for you. Right? Our boobs change throughout the month. Whether you're perimenopausal or postmenopausal, your boobs will change and you need to know what's a normal change for you and what's not a normal change for you, so that if something is not quite right, you're spotting it, you're catching it as soon as possible. You're listening to your body and saying, something's not right here, I want this checked. Because if we can't get prevention, the earliest detection is the next best thing. So get to know your boobs, feel yourself up, check them out, do your lymph flush, get your vitamin D, your iodine, your omega-3s, your fermented foods, your leafy green vegetables, your cruciferous vegetables, and notice how your health improves. So any questions, any thoughts, any comments, any feedback, if you know where to get a cheap and useful vitamin D test, please do reach out, let me know so that I can share that. And I will speak to you again next week. Have a wonderful week.